Good afternoon, everybody. Welcome. We're delighted you're here, and this is a real privilege. I know many of you here are longstanding friends to Ambassador Fujisaki. He, of course, was well known here in Washington when he was the DCM, and he was the Director General, for North America, and visited frequently, and we enjoyed those visits and came to understand and know him as a very strong intellect to help build even closer and better ties between Japan and the United States. So we welcome him back, as the ambassador. He comes to a very distinguished post, and you know that because of the quality of ambassadors that we've enjoyed here in Washington. Japan has always sent its very finest, and they're keeping the tradition strong. So we welcome you, Ambassador. Thank you. Ambassador Fujisaki has a very interesting career. I'm not going to go through it all with you. I think you have it, the bio, in your notebook. But, we were just talking about he came here from having been in Geneva, where he said that the mission was so interesting because there were such interesting topics he gets to work on. And I think that was a commentary on what he's confronting in Washington, which is the topics aren't so interesting, but they're just very difficult and very important. And so he gets to bring a different dimension of his expertise to this very important point of transition in our relationship with each other. Of course, we've got the G8 summit coming up. And Ambassador, I hope you'll share with us the thinking of Japan as we're getting ready for that. But I think there are probably other major questions that this very distinguished audience is going to have of you. Quite a few very important developments in Asia these days. So why don't we bring you directly up to share your thoughts with us, Ambassador, and then Mike Green will be leading the Q&A period with all of you later. So, ladies and gentlemen, I introduce to you Ambassador Ichiro Fujisaki. Welcome, Ambassador. We're glad you're here.
Thank you very much, Dr. Hammer. It's true that we've been sending good ambassadors to the United States, but every rules and tradition have some exceptions as well. Now, I tried to talk a little bit about G8 summit today, and I thought I have two options. One is to speak quite long and get a few questions, or speak rather shortly and get some questions. And with that first option, my colleagues told me that you'll be labeled as the most boring ambassador and you'll never invited to any institute seminars. So I decided to go for the second option with the sort of self-made premise that a less than a month old ambassador will be treated with kid gloves, even in Washington. So I will start talking about G8. I think many of you know what G8 is, but maybe some of you would be thinking that we're talking so many different issues, from debt relief issue, non-proliferation issue, regional issue, or environment. And sometimes people ask why. And I have to confess that I was one of those until I was chosen as G8 Sherpa. In 2002, I was personal representative to Prime Minister Koizumi. Sherpa, maybe some of you know, some sarcastic people say those are the people who make a bunch of papers no one will read. But still, I think if that's true for Sherpa, that's true for many of us around here as well, if I may say. Maybe inviting some harsh questions by saying this. So I did the Evian Summit and Sea Island Summit, and the conclusion I reached was that G8 Summit is something like an annual health checkup. Our society system, political system democracy, economic system market economy meets challenge every year. On political side, challenges are terrorism, could be proliferation, regional conflicts. On economic side, it could be environment, economic and social side, environment, could be development issue. So it's varied. And meeting those challenges mean, in a way, we would try to check, analyze, verify, do we have termite biting into our building, the system of our building, or are there adult diseases to our health? And doctors will prescribe us. And as in any annual health checkup, doctor may say similar things. Try not to eat too much, not to drink too much, or do exercise. It may be similar every year, but it doesn't mean that you would stop going to doctor for health checkup. You will do that. And so G8 or summit is something like that. You get a similar prescription every year, but there's some change. You need to check up the system. And that is exactly the significance of G8. That was how I understood myself. However, having said that, this year's G8 is little different from every year. And the reason I say is that it's not because we are the host, but this is really so. Acute and new challenges from in political field or in economic field. I'll go into that later. And we have to address with a sense, shared sense of now or never. Those issues, if you think what's important in your life, maybe it's your family member, could be your work for someone, but most the usual person would say air you breathe, food you eat, water you drink, your security. And these are exactly the issues that will be addressed in G8. And I would categorize today or put my focus on four categories: air-related climate change, world economy, which deals with food, energy, and finance, and also development issues, and lastly, political issues. First, on environment. This has been always a very important element. I hope that you have a sheet of paper distributed. Do you have it? One-page paper. Please take a look at it, that as well. July 7, 8, 9, and then we have agendas. This is sort of the structure of Toyako meeting, and agenda part is not Toyako agenda, but these 4 points are what I'm going to speak now. So I start from environment and climate change. And I'll talk about target discussion and game plan. Many of us in this climate change would like to see if we could arrive to long-term target agreed, meaning 50% reduction of CO2 by 2050. We call it shortly 50-50, because 50% reduction by 2050. And now we are working on this project in United Nations. We'll have a meeting this year and next year. Next year in December is sort of deadline. We call it COP15, a meeting, 15th annual meeting, and it's going to take place in Copenhagen, where we'll have to decide on the post-Kyoto framework. And for that, we are working on this. And in Toyako, we would like to give further impetus to this UN work. In Toyako, we'll be discussing these issues in G8 as well as on this July 9th major economies meeting, which is G8 plus these climate change countries, Australia, Brazil, China, India, Indonesia, Mexico, South Korea, South Africa, 16 countries. Those 16 countries is emitting 80% of CO2 out of 192 countries in the world. We discussed on June the 22nd in Korea a global midterm and long-term target, and officials have sent draft to head of state, and head of states will discuss this. Key issue here is, can we have emerging countries such as China or India or Brazil or those countries on board? Can we make them agree on this long-term target? Because China, India added would consist 22% of world CO2 at this stage. If we don't have them on board, then the meaning will be a lot lesser. However, these emerging countries, developing countries, have their say. The present situation was brought about mainly by developed countries. Why do we have to be held responsible? The other would be, if we agree to capping, will that not hamper our development? I think we have to listen to their concerns. For that, Japan has decided to take three approaches. One, do more. Do more means developed countries should do more than developing countries. Fukuda-san, Prime Minister, has announced that by 2050, we will reduce by 60 to 80%, more than the average of 50. By doing that, developing countries can reduce lesser. And we think that's our responsibility, duty to do so. And in order to set country-to-country targeting, in Davos this year, January, this Davos meeting, annual Davos meeting, Prime Minister Fukuda came and said, we'll make a quantified national target and compile sector-by-sector energy efficiency and arrive at this target. This is the do-more approach that Japan is proposing. Second is help you with energy saving. May I elaborate a bit on this? Japan's experience. We hastened our development, as many of you know, in 60s and 50s and 60s, at the expense of environment. The result, we had to pay very high cost for pollution, remedying pollution, or related health issues. So, and also, after experiencing two oil shocks in the 70s, Japan tended to change its course to energy efficiency economy. And we doubled our GDP in 30 years, but the consumption of energy in the industrial sector stayed. It did not increase. So we were able to double our economy without increasing industrial energy consumption. And nowadays, many of Japanese equipments and cars are quite popular worldwide. We also initiated what we call 3R initiative. Three R's are reduce, reuse, recycle. Try to reduce our consumption, reuse what we can, and recycle what we can. And by that, we'll have more energy efficiency as well as cleaner climate, environment. Our thinking was that we don't want developing countries to follow our steps. They need not to go through this pollution or health-related issue, but jump to clean energy from where they are. So this is the thinking behind help you with energy saving. Fukuda-san has recently announced Cool Earth Partnership. In this Cool Earth Partnership initiative, we committed ourselves to extend $10 billion in 5 years for reducing emission of CO2, which we call mitigation, in developing countries and help their adaptation. We also thought President Bush's initiative for multilateral trust fund in World Bank was very helpful. United States committed $2 billion, UK 1.6, and Japan $1.2 billion already. We hope that other G8 countries will follow our steps and express their commitments in Toyako. Third is technological innovation. 2050 is, in order to reduce our emission of CO2 and arrive at target, we can't say that it's long. Some 2050 is a long future, and I think we have to start peaking out in a few years' time. However, in terms of technological innovation, if we think 2050, we still have 40 years, and we can expect some innovation, because 40 years ago, no one really were using personal computers, internet, cellular phones, and every one of us are now using it. So we can expect that in 40 years, technological innovation to reduce CO2 can be possible, and we have to do that. In Toyako, Japan will be proposing international partnership for environment and energy. This is a roadmap for cooperation in innovation for solar cells, carbon capture and storage, and next-generation nuclear power and others. So this is an innovation of mainly developed countries, but developing countries as well, to cooperate for that area. We hope through those three measures that I said, people in the developing countries will be convinced that developed countries are really trying to do more than themselves, and that developed countries are helping, and they will get on board this target. Second major topic after climate change is world economy. We are really seeing a different world now. Subprime mortgage crisis has happened last year. Soaring energy cost. Energy cost was $60 range year before. Now it's more than double. Food price hike. Rice, wheat, soybeans have doubled or tripled. And we have never seen this recent years. It was only 10% or so growth, price hike. And now this year we are seeing double. So these issues has to be addressed. For subprime, U.S. government and Fed has taken decisive and prompt measures. Thanks to that financial side, I think it is thought to be stabilizing. However, on the real economy side, some countries have concerns for inflation. Some countries have some downside risks. So we have to really discuss these economy. And also we have to discuss a little bit how we can bring about transparency in sovereign wealth fund as well. These discussions on world finance will be very important element in coming Toyako. Energy price. I think this will be a focus as well. And we are grateful that Saudi Arabia has taken initiative on major oil producing and consumer meeting. In energy or in other areas, of course, market is decided finally by demand and supply situation. But market is not only decided by that, there's a market psychology as well. So we hope that by sending strong message, assuring strong message from G8, this will soothe market psychology and help stabilize the market as well. Food, as I said, it has soared in last 1 year. Last month in Rome, head of states met, and UN has taken the responsibility to work out a game plan, comprehensive guideline for emergency situation. So then we hope that they will come up with some conclusion in a couple of months. So G8 will address more mid-term and long-term issues. Food production increase, trade, such as export restraint or biofuel, and those, I think, will be discussed. On economic side, I think I have to lastly mention WTO is very important as well. WTO negotiations has been going on for 6 years. It has been agreed that we'll come to conclusion by the end of the year. If we don't, you'll have a new government and maybe we'll miss the chance to agree after 6 years. So WTO ministers will be meeting from July the 21st, and I hope that G8 will send a strong message that we really have to come around and make substantial agreement in this July meeting so that we can conclude everything to the detail by the end of the year. Next subject, third one, is development. We'll are putting emphasis much on Africa and health, education, water. Japan, as you know, has brought about these issues in Okinawa summit, and we started outreach with African countries. We see a sea change in Africa's situation. Throughout the 90s, growth rate was 2%. Nowadays, growth rate average of African countries is about 5 to 6%. This is an opportunity. In the 90s, there were many conflicts, regional. There are some remaining, but drastically reduced. In that backdrop, we had a TICAD meeting, Tokyo Initiative for Cooperation, a conference on African development, and 51 African states, 42 heads of states out of 51, and 74 international organizations came, and we agreed on action plan for 5 years. In that, Japan agreed that we'll double ODA to Africa in 5 years and will help. Private investment will be doubling in this 5 years as well. On Africa, as I said, we will be discussing many issues, but I'll touch upon health. This, we have been touching upon HIV/AIDS, malaria, tuberculosis, and others, but this year we are taking somewhat new approach as well. Of course, to address these issues are important, but we'll be addressing sort of horizontal approach. That means that the common elements in the measures could be addressed. And for example, we have committed ourselves to foster 100,000 workers who will be working on medical field or caretaking field in 5 years. And we'll try to do this as a part of ODA too. And there are other ideas. Our idea is, for example, in Japan, we have a mother-baby handbook when we'll give out when newly born baby is there, and mother and doctors will fill in all the disease or health condition that baby has shown. And then everyone, even the doctors change, he or she will know exactly what kind of personal history this little boy or girl had. And those ideas we are presenting now. Water and education, I'll just cut it for the time's sake. Political affairs, lastly, because if I don't finish quickly, I think I'm not abiding by what I said first. So, and Kyoto, I'll just in Kyoto, now foreign ministers are meeting. They're discussing proliferation, terrorism, peace building. I'll just touch upon very few issues. North Korea, Iran, and Afghanistan. North Korea, we hope G8 will be sending a strong message. Take steady steps in accordance with the six-party talks agreement and abandon all nuclear weapons. Also, earliest settlement of outstanding issues, including abduction issue. We have just received declaration of North Korea on their activities by China, the chair country. All those other countries will be receiving from China and verify it, discuss how to verify it as well. So we hope that in doing so, we'll keep very close contact with the United States. Iran, we hope that G8 will be sending a strong message to Iran to suspend enrichment of uranium. In the Rome meeting last month, Ahmadinejad, the Iranian president, asked our prime minister to meet. In that meeting, Prime Minister strongly stated that Iran should take initiative to suspend their nuclear enrichment, uranium enrichment. Unfortunately, Iranian president said this is a sovereign matter. However, we hope that by continuing to sending strong message, they will come around to abide by to UN Security Resolution. Japan has been freezing asset in accordance with the UN Security Resolution. On peace building, peace fostering issue, we've been engaging Sudan, Middle East, Iraq, but just one or two word on those countries. Iraq. All of us in G8 are committed to reconstruction of Iraq. Yesterday, our trade and energy minister, was in Iraq and had a meeting with the Iraqi prime minister and ministers and conveyed our strong resolve to continue to help Iraq reconstruction. He also stated that Iraq should increase their oil production. To that, and oil production is 2.5 million barrels per day in Iraq. Iraqi side said they would increase it to 4.5, and in 10 years it will be 6. Afghan, this year, National Development Strategy was established. Next year, there'll be presidential election. The Afghan reconstruction is a G8 top priority as well. Japan has been always cooperating on Afghan reconstruction and fight against terrorism. We had our Marine Forces has been, from the beginning, participating in Operation Enduring Freedom by refueling ships in the Indian Ocean. And we've been also helping to stabilize a border region between Pakistan and Afghanistan, what they call federal administered trade tribal area. And happy to note that yesterday G8 ministers agreed that they'll extend $4 billion and agreed on 150 projects in that area. I think we'll, in the leaders' level as well, we'll reaffirm strong support to that region. Lastly, I think I have been able to make make it clear to you that this G8 summit is not another summit. It's a very special one. Time is running out. We are seeing many different challenges. We hope that we will have a successful meeting with the cooperation of the United States and all other countries participating, not only G8 but other outreach countries as well. But I'm hopeful that leaders recognize this and will make the meeting successful. I thank you very much.
Ambassador Fujisaki, thank you. We'll take questions for a while. And I'd like to ask people to raise your hands, identify yourselves. Fujisaki-san knows many of you, but he's back in Washington after several years, so it would be helpful. Stanley Roth.
Oh, hi.
Welcome back.
Thank you.
Good to have you here again. Certainly, we all wish you luck on this very ambitious agenda that Japan has set out, and if you make progress in even two or three of those items, it would have to be a success. I wanted to, what I think in American terms we'd call this a softball, give you an opportunity to reflect.
Thank you very much for good old sober advice of Stanley Roth.
I would like to get your assessment, and I mean this in a very easy general sense, of how you see U.S.-Japan relations from three time perspectives. When you left as DCM, where you are taking over as ambassador now, and where you hope to leave it, and I hope the far distant future when you go back, in other words, what you intend to work on while you're here.
Thank you very much. Maybe to some of you who have been there in the Japan-American Society, I'll be saying the same thing. On U.S.-Japan relations, some people would say that Japanese are grumbling that we're not getting enough attention. Maybe there are some people like that. But I don't abide by to that view. I think Japan-U.S. relations is on right track. That doesn't mean I think we are doing great, but it doesn't mean that we can be complacent. There are a lot of things to do. And I think one is to face squarely the existing issues. Bilateral issues, if can we advance some of them? Two, regional issues like North Korea, what fortify corporations. Third, global issues, climate change, Middle East, other issues. Is Africa, are there room for us to expand our cooperation? I think there are, so I think we'll work on that.
Mike Miyazawa. Throughout the history of human beings, as far as I know, there has never been an eternal alliance. Maybe U.S.-Israeli alliance could be an exception. President Bush said last month in an address to the Israeli parliament, and I quote, "The alliance between our governments is unbreakable, yet the source of our friendship runs deeper than any treaty. It is grounded in the shared spirit of our people, the bond of the book. Book, of course, with capital B. Having said that, I have a two-part question. Do you think that eventually we'll see the day when this Japan-U.S. alliance comes to an end in the future? And B, if you think so, then what do you think is the appropriate strategic course of action for Japan, especially beyond the current triangular framework of U.S., Japan, and China?
Thank you very much for a very good question, Mr. Miyazawa. There are sort of friends, old friends from State Department as well, who had worked on Japan-U.S. relations. I recognize some of them, and I think we were trained same way in State Department and Foreign Ministry of Japan. Make no predictions.
Not known as a softball question.
Hi, Rusty Deming at SAIS. Welcome back. I'm back.
Thanks.
Fujisaki again. One of your predecessors, Ambassador Yanai, met with the Prime Minister this week and delivered his commission's report on reinterpreting the right of collective self-defense with a very forward-looking position. My question is that going to go anywhere in the current political environment in Japan? Or is this another report going on the shelf for future reference?
I thought I answered your question, Rusty. But I think, very frankly, as you have indicated, the atmosphere, political atmosphere, is not as maybe same as when this was commissioned or asked. We have to see. But my sort of sense is maybe not is quite same, too. Thank you very much.
It doesn't come naturally to me, but I'm trying to look to the left. Even Asahi Shimbun on the left, isn't it?
Yeah, go ahead. Yeah, Tamio Master from Tokyo Electric Power Company. Thank you for wide range of your presentation, especially for climate change issue. Power sector have a very strong interest in sector approach for climate change. And my question is, how do G8 summit members think about the sectoral approach for climate change?
G8 members,
how do G8 summit members think about the sectoral approach?
I think there are not one consensus yet, but I think it is understood that it's a very logical way of coming to national target. So hope that this will be agreed upon, but I don't think there's already a consensus yet.
Fujisaki-san, could you say a little bit more about North Korea? The president announced today that there's a 45-day notification period after which he would lift the sanctions if North Korea verifies. And, of course, in that interim, he'll see Prime Minister Fukuda bilaterally at the G8. What do you think Japan will look for during that period to be comfortable with sanctions lifting on North Korea?
I think, the declaration was made. So what is important for not only for Japan but U.S. as well is that we have to verify what was declared. And that is the first task, what we all have to do in the six-party talks. And I was expecting, in a way, such question from maybe not moderator, but some of you. And I looked at today's statement of Mr. Bush, president. This, I think, says very clearly states the country's position. So I would read out only the point. He says, the policy of the United States is a Korean Peninsula free of all nuclear weapons. The U.S. will carefully observe North Korea's actions and act accordingly. U.S. will never forget the abduction of Japanese citizens by the North Korea. Will continue to closely cooperate and coordinate with Japanese and press North Korea to swiftly resolve the abduction issue. I think this is an excellent statement. I thank you.
Thank you all very much. You know, if the G8 is our annual health checkup and the doctor tells us every year to go to the gym and work out, it's always helpful to have a good trainer. And as a Sherpa, and now back here in Washington, you've been an excellent trainer and will be an excellent trainer. Not too tough, but inspiring us to all do better. And you see a lot of friends in the audience, Ambassador Fujisaki, many of whom you know, who will, I am certain, do their utmost to help you succeed in your post here. And it's very good to have you back in Washington. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it. Thank you.